So what I'm presenting today is a low latency congestion and timing analysis attack against the Tor network. My name's Nathan Evans. I did this work with my advisor, Christian Grothoff, and Roger Dingledine. So that's the generic overview of what the attack is. It's called a practical congestion attack on Tor using long paths. So the main question I get when I tell people that we've created an attack on Tor is, why in the world would you want to attack such a wonderful thing as Tor? And maybe not so much with this audience. But the answer to that question is we're actually trying to help improve Tor, and the only way to do that is through research, finding the flaws that exist in the Tor protocol. Also, Tor is a big target for adversaries who are actually trying to de-anonymize users, which we are not trying to do specifically. Tor is also good to do research on because any progress you make, usually because they have a large user base and it's a widely supported project, if you find a flaw, they will most likely fix it in pretty good time. So the results that we're presenting today is that if a client builds a circuit under certain conditions in the Tor network, we're able to discover all of the Tor routers which are used in that circuit, which greatly reduces Tor's ability to provide anonymity. So some general information for people who don't know anything about Tor. Tor stands for the Onion Router. It's a peer-to-peer network made up of mixes. Basically what a mix server is a server that takes data from a source and relays it to a destination, thus hiding to any adversary who the actual source was, and also hiding from the destination who the original sender was. Tor routes data through a network of these mixes, so more than one mix in series, and they call this a circuit. Also, data is encrypted as it passes through the nodes so that everybody doesn't see what traffic is being sent between each one of the mixes. So routing in Tor is pretty fundamental, so we take a minute to describe it. Again, data is forwarded through the network via a series of mixes. An important security aspect of Tor is that each router only knows the previous hop and the next hop in the circuit. So there's no way for anyone to know all of the routers in the circuit. And if someone was able to know all of the routers in the circuit, then you could go to the last hop and see what data is being transmitted, and go to the first hop and see who's the actual sender of the data, and discover everything you need to know to de-anonymize someone. So this is the key security goal that we are attacking, is that no one can discover the full path. So here's a routing example of how Tor routes data, just to make it really clear. So on the left top here, we have a client, little Firefox web browser guy. Down here, we have an Apache web server. So the normal way when someone wants to connect to a web server from a web browser is they connect directly from the client to the server. What Tor does is each one of these servers counts as a Tor node, and what the client does to use Tor is chooses three of these nodes, in this case, Tor node 1, 5, and 8, and it builds that circuit, which is represented by the green directed line here. And instead of sending data directly to the server, it sends it via this circuit. So the client sends data to Tor node 1 sends Tor node 5 to 8, and 8 to the server. So the important security or anonymity aspect that you get is that the server, as far as it's concerned, only knows that it's talking to Tor node 8. It has no idea who the client is. And in fact, it has no idea who Tor node 5 is. And the reason that Tor uses more than one mix is to increase the level of anonymity because no one actually knows who the original guy is. And the second important thing is, again, that, say, Tor node 8 here on the bottom knows about Tor node 5 and knows about the server, but it has no idea that Tor node 1 or the client is involved in the circuit. So this is how Tor provides anonymity. There's some previous work that achieved the same goal as we've achieved with our work, which, again, is to discover all the Tor routers used in a circuit. It was by Murdoch and Anitsis in 2005. It was called Low-Cost Traffic Analysis of Tor. Our title is kind of a play on that. And basically what their attack did was add a single connection to a Tor server while monitoring a circuit that was using that server. And by monitoring that circuit and using that server with one added connection, they were able to detect that the circuit was, in fact, in use. And it's a little more complicated than that. That's quite simplified. So their attack worked reasonably well in 2004, 2005. They did it on 13 out of 50 of the Tor routers due to some limitations with the routers they could use, and it worked pretty well. Unfortunately, what we have found is that their attack is no longer accurate. There's over 1,000 Tor routers, hundreds of thousands of users, and this means that the Tor network is heavily loaded. So it's very hard to detect the added load of one single connection, which is basically what they were doing, amidst this flood of all these other connections. Also, Tor has evolved where connections are taken down and brought up very quickly, so there's a lot of fluctuations in traffic on the Tor network. So we replicated their experiments, and unfortunately we found their method to be much less effective on today's network. So here's a graphical example of some data we got from running their experiments. I use this graph throughout all of our examples, so I'm going to explain it. On the x-axis here, we have the sample number. So they did 5 per second, so this was just, that's how many samples. And then on the y-axis, we have, it says latency variance, but for their attack, it's actually latency. So what they're doing is attacking a node that's part of a circuit while measuring the circuit. So what you expect to see is that the control data, which is in blue, will be much less, a lower latency on average than the attack data, which is in red. And to me, the distributions look pretty similar, and that's what we're trying to show. This actually, I think, comes up as a positive, so this is a true positive for the Murdoch-Anitzis attack. However, the next slide, because of the way that they do their statistics, this is actually representing data where we're not actually performing any attack. And because of all these spikes, which are actually just normal Tor network spikes that come out of the circuit, their analysis actually says that this is a positive when it's actually a false positive. So basically, we use the exact same statistical methods and the same source code. Murdoch-Anitzis were kind enough to provide us with this. Unfortunately, when we were doing the tests, the highest correlations we saw were actually with false positives as opposed to true positives. And we posit that that's just because of all of the additional traffic that's on the Tor network and because they do this detection of spikes and things that are outside of the mean of the baseline data, they get a lot of false positives. We're not saying the attack is bad, and actually we build on it, so it's actually really good. And the attack may still be viable for some Tor nodes. Also, as they state in their paper, if they were able to improve their statistical method somewhat, that might improve the false positive, false negative problem that we found. So now getting to what we do to de-anonymize Tor users, or not de-anonymize Tor users, to reduce Tor users' anonymity. So there's three design issues that allow us to perform our attack on Tor. The first is that it's a low latency network, which means that there's no delays induced at any of the mixes as they handle traffic. So essentially, as soon as somebody sends something, it's sent out. Also, the path length is set at a small number, and it's always the same. It's a path length of 3 in Tor right now. And the main contribution and the main thing that allows our attack to work is that we can create paths of any length, of arbitrary length, and in fact, circular paths through the network, which allows us to put load on Tor servers pretty much at will. So because this arbitrary length circular path is such an integral part of our attack, I have a graphic describing it. So this is the regular path example. Like I showed before, we have our client here and our server, and the client creates its circuit through the Tor network. We just have the 3 Tor nodes listed. So the first thing we do when we want to build a long circular path to put load on Tor servers is we don't connect to the server. Instead, we loop back around the Tor network using the same Tor nodes, and this is part of the Tor protocol that allows us to do this. So now what we've done is put twice the load on each of the Tor servers. But I said we can do arbitrary path lengths, so we'll keep doing that. And eventually we have a path length of 21. And then we finally connect to the server. So there's two important things to note. The first is that if you think of the Murdoch-Anitzis attack where they were using one additional circuit to put load on a Tor server, we've now created one that's 7 times that just by using the Tor network. The second important thing to note is that the path between the client and the first Tor server and the last Tor server and the web server still is very small. And this is what makes our attack low cost, because we're actually using the Tor network to multiply the attacker bandwidth for us, which is kind of nice. But it allows us to put load on any Tor server that we choose, basically. So how did we implement our attack? The first thing we do to understand our attack is we run an exit server, which anybody can do in the Tor network. So part of our attack is that a client chooses us as the third node in their circuit. So the client browses like they normally would, and at our exit node, instead of sending back just the HTML response they want, we inject JavaScript. And what this JavaScript does is send us ping measurements at a static interval, which we are then able to use to get some latency variance information from the circuit. So while we're gathering that information, we choose Tor routers, essentially at random, and we make these long circular paths through the Tor routers. If we choose a router that's part of the circuit, we should see a change in the latency variance of the connection. And that would mean that we have found the correct node that's part of the circuit. If we don't find it, then we have to pick another node and start over. But that's basically how our attack works. Here is a graphical example. So again, we have the client, little Firefox guy, and the server. So the client legitimate Tor circuit is represented by the directed black line. You can see that we're running this exit node, which is chosen by the client. The other two red screen guys are also run by us, which I'll get to in a second. And the dotted blue line shows the JavaScript ping measurements, which we use to measure latency variance. So what we can see here is that we're trying to find this first Tor node. So what we do is build this long circular path represented by the double green line using a malicious client connecting to a malicious server. And if we have picked the right first node, when we load it up with this long circular path, hopefully we'll see a latency variance change at the exit node. And that means that we found the correct node, and we now know all three servers in the path. And in case it's not clear why we know all three servers when we've only figured out one, is because, remember, if we're running the exit node, we know the previous hop and the next hop. So running the exit node at the outset of the attack, we already know two-thirds of the path, which is why we only need to find the first Tor router, which is important because it takes a long time to find any Tor routers. So I keep talking about these long circular paths and how they affect the latency variance measurements that we receive. So now I'm going to talk about how exactly that works internally. So here we show three queues, which are the internal representation of there's one queue for each circuit that a Tor server is handling. So this represents a Tor server that's handling three circuits. And when data comes in, it's just put into the appropriate queue, and the queues are just processed very simply in round-robin fashion. So they come in, and they go out in round-robin fashion. If the queue's empty, it's skipped. The important thing to note, though, is that if the queues are full, each circuit essentially gets one-third of the server's bandwidth and CPU resources, whatever's necessary to process that. So what we do by building these long circular paths is, say there's three legitimate circuits, well, we bounce up, or we greatly increase the number of queues, the number of circuits that the Tor server has to handle, and therefore, as things are processed in the same manner, in round-robin fashion, each queue only gets 1/15th of the time instead of 1/3 of the time. And it's not always 1/3 and 1/15th. It also obviously depends on what's going on in the Tor network. But the important thing here is we've gone through the same number of iterations and we haven't even made it around to the legitimate queue twice yet, whereas in the other one it would have been processed five times. So this is how we actually change the latency of a Tor server, because we build these long circular paths which increase the number of queues, and it just takes longer for that Tor server to handle a legitimate client as opposed to our malicious clients. So here's the attack example one more time. The only thing I want to note on this graph is that our malicious client connects to our malicious server, and the only reason we're running the malicious server so that we can send data back down that circuit as fast as possible. Also, the other two routers that we use in our attack circuit are arbitrary, and we don't even need to use two. You could build a very long path including other Tor servers. But we try to use higher bandwidth Tor servers than the Tor server that we're trying to induce load on, and that's because if you have a higher bandwidth Tor server, it can probably hurt the other guy more. So moving on from there. So code-wise, our attack implementation, we had to modify the exit node to do the JavaScript stuff. We had to modify a client node to be malicious, which allows us to make these long paths and, in fact, pass through the same node over and over again. We have a web server that just sends data back down the malicious circuit as fast as it can. We have the client-side JavaScript, which we use to get the measurement data. And then we have an instrumentation client, which takes all the data and crunches it and all that stuff. So here's some gathered data examples from our attack. And it's the same layout as with the two previous graph slides. On the x-axis, we have the sample number. And on the y-axis, we have latency variance. The blue line is baseline or control data. The red line is attack data. So we're measuring latency variance on a circuit while we're attacking the correct router. And the green line, which isn't that important for this, shows the bandwidth that the attacker had to put forth in order to induce this effect. So the main thing you want to see here is that the blue baseline run is significantly lower than the red control run. And hopefully that's clear, that the red is at a much higher level of latency variance than the blue. And this is because our attack is working. So we have four of these examples. And you can see to varying degrees, the attack doesn't always do the exact same thing. It doesn't always work as well as it does on certain routers. And this is basically because different routers have different bandwidths, and they have different load characteristics, and those change. And if a Tor server is under really high load, we probably won't be able to affect its latency very much because it's already so slow. It's already overburdened. But again, the main thing to see here with all these is that the red is significantly higher than the blue. So we have the same data represented as histograms, where now the x-axis is basically buckets of latency variance values. So this big green bar on the left, green in this case is the baseline data, shows that there were 500 samples when we were running the baseline test that were between 0 and 1 seconds of latency variance. So with these graphs, what we're trying to see is that basically that this green sort of far left cluster should always be there, which means that there's a lot of low latency variance values when we're not performing our attack, and there are higher latency variance values, which is the red data, when we are performing the attack. And then we also have these regression lines that follow the histograms, and we want to see that the angle for the green one is higher than the angle for the red one. So again, depending on what's going on in the network, which Tor routers we're attacking, because it's all random, we can see that our attack succeeds with varying degrees of success. But it hopefully always works. So we don't want to just look at all these pictures to decide whether or not our attack is working, because we can't pay somebody to de-anonymize the Tor users for us. So what we do is we use a modified chi-square test. We compare the baseline distribution, basically with the histograms, to the attack distribution. So a high chi-square value indicates that we have altered the distribution. And then we say in the correct direction, because if you go back to this graph, in this case, remember I said that the green should usually be at the left and be higher than the red. If the red is higher than the green on the left-hand side, we don't want that to count as a change in distribution because it's not a change in the correct way. That might not make sense, but I'm going to go with it for now. So we get the chi-square value, and in fact, we found that we get a lot of false positives running our attack, again, because the Tor network is so heavily loaded that sometimes there's just a lot of load on a Tor server that affects our values. So then we take the product of these chi-square values over multiple runs to further narrow down which router should be part of the circuit, or we think is part of the circuit. So we basically take the top routers from the first run, and then we iterate over those again, and we keep narrowing it down until one node percolates to the top. So these are graphs of doing that cumulative chi-squared test. The red line in both of these indicates the router that was actually part of the circuit that we were attacking. So we want to see that red line basically either is at the top or percolates to the top over time. And what you can see pretty clearly is that it does. We did both of these tests on the 200 and some guard routers that are in the Tor network. And after relatively few runs, the correct router usually stands out. The numbers on the y-axis here don't actually matter because they're just product of chi-squared confidence values, and those are just confidence values of how different the distributions are. So the numbers don't really mean anything, but the important thing is that the correct router pops out to the top. A concern with our attack is how fast it actually works. Usually we did the baseline and then attack on a router for 5 minutes each or 10 minutes each, which would be too long if you have to test all 1,000 routers. So what this graph shows is that the chi-squared value for the correct router after about 2 minutes jumps up to about what it's going to be at the end, and typically for the other routers, even like this purple one would be a false positive. But even for those, after about 2 minutes, they're indicative of what they will be at the end of the run. So the point here is we don't actually need to perform the attack for as long as we do to maybe possibly get good data. So with our attack, what do we actually achieve? So we identify all the routers that are part of a circuit that a Tor user chooses. We do not identify the user. We're not claiming to. However, we achieve this on the modern Tor network, whereas we had trouble with the main previous work, which was the Murdoch-Denizis attack that did the same thing. Our attack works on routers with varying bandwidths, which is important because there are Tor routers with very different amounts of bandwidth. So if someone were actually performing this attack, again, they're not de-anonymizing the users, but Tor is about as effective as a network of one-hop proxies. Our attack is effective because we're running the exit node first, which allows us to get 2 out of 3 nodes in the circuit at the outset, which is nice. The really nice thing is that we're able to use the Tor network to multiply the bandwidth of the attacker to basically do this denial of service attack on Tor nodes without requiring much bandwidth on our part. So there are some fixes that have been proposed that we thought up, that other people thought up. I'm only going to talk about the one that the Tor developers have chosen to implement, which is don't allow infinite path lengths. So basically, they just count how many times the circuit is extended and cut it off at 8 or 9, I think it's 8. But basically, this is a good countermeasure for the attack that we created, but it was also put forth, not by us, that you can actually still do the attack just by making a circuit through Tor and then using that circuit and then creating another client instance and making another circuit through Tor. So basically putting Tor on top of Tor on top of Tor. And we've done this. It's harder to make long paths. We haven't actually done the attack like this, but we have done a proof of concept of it. So there are some improvements for the attack. If somebody was going to do this in the real world, they'd probably want to parallelize the testing. Currently, we only rule out one router per testing cycle when we're doing the attacking. If you could do more than one, obviously you could go through the whole list of routers much more quickly. You could also do some improved latency measurements. So if you know that the first hop is under a certain amount of latency, then you could rule out routers that are in much further parts of the world away or something. So to sum it all up, the current Tor implementation allows arbitrary length paths. It uses a path length of 3. And both of these things together allow us to perform this attack, which discovers all of the routers in the circuit. The main thing is that we can do this latency-altering attack on any Tor router pretty much at will. And this reveals the paths that are used. And with that, I will take questions.